Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Fan Chen from Intel Labs, and I'm very happy to be here to introduce our work on content-aware flash translation layer. This is a joint work with my PhD advisor, Professor Xiaodong Zhang, and Tian Luo from Ohio State University. Okay, let's get started. As we know, flash memory-based SSD is actually a kind of semiconductor device built on NAND flash. It's completely mechanical device components-free, so this brings many technical merits, such as high performance, low power consumption, shock resistance, and its price is also decreasing. So actually, SSD has already been widely used in different areas, especially mobile computers and some high-performance desktops. On the other hand, a potential concern about the SSD is its limited lifespan. This is essentially caused by the limited program erase cycle of flash memory, or P cycles. For the multi-level cell flash memory, or MLC, it's about 5,000 to 10,000 cycles. For the single-level cell, or SLC flash memory, it's about 100,000 to 1 million. As a result, the SSD also has quite a limited lifespan. So most of the prior research work are focusing on how to design good wear leveling policies to improve the lifespan. On the market, you often can see that SSD manufacturers claim that SSD actually can sustain routine usages for years. However, in reality, SSD endurance would still remain a serious concern because of several reasons. The first reason is about the technical trend of flash memory. Actually, as the bit density increases, the prices will go down, but at the same time, the endurance also decreases. So in the last few years, actually, we have already seen a sharp drop of P cycles from 10,000 to 5,000, and this trend will still continue. The second reason is that the current storage system is heavily relying on redundancy-based solutions such as RAID to provide the reliability guarantees. But if we switch to SSD, the RAID solution has to face some high risk of correlated device failures. There is a paper published in Eurosys 2010 talking about this issue. It's quite interesting. The third reason is that actually we still lack sufficient public information about endurance of SSD. In academic work, you can find some research studies in flash memory chips and small factor flash drives, such as sub drives. And you also can see both of some positive and some negative results reported. In industry, a recent report from Google points out the endurance and the retention has not yet proven in the field. So we still have quite a vaguer picture about this issue. Finally, the commercial systems are quite sensitive to the reliability issues. It's not only because many commercial systems often undergo heavy, you know, quite intensive write traffic, but also because the permanent data loss is totally unacceptable, especially in some financial system. So the SSD endurance still remains quite a serious issue, and the solutions that can effectively enhance the lifespan of SSD is highly desirable in practice. In general, the SSD's lifespan is determined by four factors. First of all, of course, the P cycles of flash memory, also the efficiency of FTL designs, and also it's determined by the write volume you do every day and the available flash memory space inside of the SSD. So with these four factors, you can use this equation to largely estimate the endurance for a given SSD. And accordingly, we can optimize the lifespan by considering these four factors. First of all, we can increase the P cycles of flash memory. But as I mentioned before, this trend will seems to to get worse and worse. Secondly, you can also improve the efficiency of FTL designs, especially the garbage collection and the wear leveling policies. Actually, this has already been well researched, and we consider it's quite mature now. You also can reduce the total amount of incoming traffic, but for the runtime system, it's generally determined by the usage model and the worker property. And finally, you can increase the size of over-provisioned space, and this is designated during the manufacturing time, and it cannot be very big due to the production cost considerations. So for the last two factors here, actually, we often consider these two factors cannot be optimized during the runtime. So our question is whether we can optimize them on the fly and put back these two missing parts here. So in this talk, I will show that actually this goal can be achieved based on our observation of a widely existing phenomena, data duplication. Data duplication is quite common. For a Linux kernel developer, you often make several copies of your code to back up your code. And we studied 15 disks in the Department of Computer Science and Engineering at The Ohio State University. And we find that actually about 8% to 85% of the disk data are duplicate. And also, if we consider the fact that the over-provisioned space inside an SSD is only accounted for just about 6% to 25%. So if we can remove these redundant data, it's a very good extension. We also checked the write redundancy in 11 different workloads, and we find similar results. Actually, duplicated writes account for about 6% to 28%. So if we can remove them, we can directly improve the lifespan. So we have a good opportunity there. So based on this observation, our purpose is to make FTL content-aware. The existing flash translation layer tries to emulate a hard disk drive with a LBA interface to the host. So for a content-aware flash translation layer, or CFTL, we want to put in two new functionality. The first functionality is to eliminate the duplicated writes. The second functionality is to coalesce the redundant data. So this can provide two potential benefits here. By removing the duplicated writes on the fly, we can directly improve the lifespan, and we can put back the first missing part. By coalesce the redundant data, we can effectively extend the available flash memory space so that we can put the second missing part back. In order to design the CFTL, we must also address several technical challenges. The first challenge is that CFTL is working at the device level in the firmware, so we only see some block level information. We totally have no idea about the files or something like that. And also, we are limited by the resource because the on-device resource is quite limited. You just have very limited RAM space and computational power. So, and also, we are constrained by the workload properties. The main purpose is to handle regular file system workloads instead of the archival or backup streams, which have very high duplication level. And also, of course, we needed to maintain a very low overhead. Otherwise, this design cannot fly. This page outlines the agenda of this talk, and I will first give an overview of CFTL. CFTL is working in the firmware of the SSD, and for a given incoming request, I will first buffer it into our own device cache, and for each page, we will use a hash engine to generate a fingerprint, and each fingerprint is used to look up in a fingerprint store. And if we can find a match there, that means we have a resident page sharing the same content. We can just update the mapping table and cancel that write. If no match is found there, we just dispatch the write to the flash memory as in regular situations. So the first thing we need to do is to hash and generate fingerprints. We use a fixed size chunking. And with the basic hashing unit size is a flash page, typically it's about 4 kilobytes. And we use the SHA-1 hash function to generate a 160-bit SHA-1 hash value as a fingerprint for each given flash page. And we can identify the duplicated data by comparing these fingerprints. These fingerprints are maintained in an in-memory data structure called the fingerprint store. The challenge to design a good fingerprint store is that we must lower the memory overhead for storing these fingerprints. We also need to reduce the fingerprint store lookup overhead. To address these issues, we first conducted several experiments, and we collected data about the duplications for each fingerprints. And in this figure, we show the CDF, the cumulative distribution function for the duplications of the fingerprints. So we can see here the x-axis shows the total number of the duplicate pages for a given fingerprint. The y-axis shows the percentage of total fingerprints. So the finding here is that only about 10 to 20% of the fingerprints have more than two duplicate pages. This actually means that most fingerprints, if we store all these fingerprints in memory, actually most fingerprints are not duplicate. So it's a big waste of memory space. Also, if we maintain all these fingerprints in a fingerprint store, the fingerprint store will be very big, and most lookups will eventually turn out to be a waste of time because we will not find any match there. So we only needed to store the most likely to be duplicate fingerprints in memory and search them in the fingerprint store. I will not give further details about the fingerprint store due to the time limits. Interested people can go to the paper for more information about it. So once we identified the duplicated pages by comparing the fingerprints, now we can use the indirect mapping mechanism to map multiple logical pages sharing the same content to one single physical page. The existing mapping structure is essentially a one-to-one mapping. So basically, you can see this kind of a mapping table inside of the SSD firmware. The left column shows the logical block address. The right column shows the physical block address. So it's a one-to-one mapping. We needed to maintain two mapping informations. The forward mapping keeps track of the mapping between the logical pages to the physical page. At the same time, we also needed to maintain a reverse mapping here, which points from the physical page to the logical page. We needed the reverse mapping because when we are doing the garbage collection and the wire labeling, we needed to copy some data from one place to another place. If we needed to do that, we needed to go through the reverse mapping and update these entries. In contrast, the indirect mapping in CFTL is quite more complicated. This is because it's essentially an end-to-end mapping. For example, now we have two logical pages sharing the same content mapped to the same physical page. And we also needed to maintain two reverse mappings here. And if we relocate the data from one place to another place, we needed to go through each reverse mapping and update the entries one by one. The challenge here is about the reverse mapping. This is because the total number of shared logical pages sharing the same content can change greatly during the runtime, and also this number can be very big. So the problem is how to keep this reverse mapping information safely and efficiently. We can use an array, a linked list, or we just do some exhaustive scanning scanning on the mapping table on the fly. Obviously, this will cause some high temporal cost or some spatial cost. And also, another problem is that we needed to keep and update this reverse mapping information in Flash to survive the power failure. However, if we keep a long list of this reverse mapping information in Flash, we need to frequently update it, and this will become very slow and complex. To address this problem, we designed a two-level indirect mapping mechanism here. In this two-level indirect mapping mechanism, we put an intermediate layer that's called a virtual block address. So it's kind of a pseudo address representing a set of logical pages sharing the same physical page. In this new design, we have two mapping tables. One is called a primary mapping table and a secondary mapping table. So for the primary mapping table, for the unique pages, we still have one forward mapping. It's one-to-one mapping too. For the shared pages, now we have multiple logical pages mapped to one virtual block address. So it's an end-to-one mapping here. For the secondary mapping table, we keep track of the mapping between the virtual block address to the physical pages. So this is a one-to-one mapping. Now the reverse mapping is becoming very simple. For the unique pages, it's a one-to-one mapping. For the shared pager, it's also one-to-one mapping. Now let's see what would happen if we relocate pages from one place to another place. When we remove it, we just update the reverse mapping and the related entries. So the point here is that the N-to-1 mapping or 1-to-1 mapping is totally limited between the primary mapping table and the secondary mapping table, and there is completely no need to update the 1-to-N reverse mappings here. So this greatly simplifies the design. Besides, a potential concern about the CFTL is about the overhead of fingerprinting. This is not only because computing a SHA hash function in the on-device processor incurs high overhead, it's also because the on-device buffer space could be limited if that's being overfilled, then any latency of doing fingerprinting cannot be effectively hidden behind. And also, you can put a dedicated hash engine. It partially solves the problem, but that also increases the production cost. So we designed several acceleration methods to effectively speed up the fingerprinting. We do some sampling here. We do some lightweight pre-hashing. We also do dynamic switch. But in this talk, I will only focus on the sampling here. The principle behind designing the sampling for hashing here is we try to speed up the COM case. In the initial slide, in the first few pages, I have in this talk, I have mentioned that actually most of the writes in the regular file system workloads are just unique. So most of the hashing operations, if we do hashing for all incoming requests, we will find that most of the hashing operations turn out to be useless eventually. So the intuition here is that if we find one page in a write request is a duplicate page, then the other pages in the same write request are very likely to be duplicated too. So we can just select one page in a write request as a sample page. And we check the sample page, and we fingerprint it, and we check it, we look it up in the fingerprint store. If we find that the sample page is a duplicate, then we can go ahead and hash and examine the other pages in the same write request. If we find it's not a duplicate, then we just assume the whole write request will not be duplicated, and we can abort doing fingerprinting at the earliest time, which saves a lot of latency. The challenge here is that, first of all, we are working in the device level, so we do not have any file-level information. For example, we cannot easily use the first page in a file to choose the first file as a sample page. And also some overhead concerns. That means we try to avoid doing hashing as much as possible, so we cannot rely on hashing to select the samples. There are several potential candidate solutions here. The first potential solution is that we can use the request-based sampling. For example, for a given request, we can just pick the first page in a request as a sample page. The problem is that the request may not repeat, so the sample page may not overlap it either. So we abandoned this approach. And also, we can use the LBM-based sampling. So for example, we can use the lower bits in a page's LBA address. However, it's similarly, the overwritten locations may not repeat either. So we cannot use this one. And finally, we choose to use the content-based sampling. We select and compare the first 4 bytes in each page. And we compare the first 4 bytes for all the pages in a write request. If we find the page with the maximum sample bytes, and this page will be selected as a sample page. And we also studied choosing several different sample bytes, for example, the last 4 bytes, or we sparsely just pick 4 bytes from the whole page, and we find the first 4 bytes perform quite well and consistently across different workloads. To evaluate our performance, we use a Microsoft SSD simulator, which is the extension to disk sim simulator. And we modified it with the CFTL design and put in our on-device buffer. And we use the default SSD configuration, and we estimated the latency of hashing code on our ARM simulator. We use the 3 different workloads here, 3 sets of workloads here. The first workload is a desktop workload. It's a typical office workloads. So you do some emailing, some web surfing. It runs for 12 and 19 hours. The second workload is the TPCH queries, a database query, and they run for 2 minutes to 40 minutes. The third workload is the transaction processing, the TPCC workloads, and each workload runs for 30 minutes to 4 hours. Let's first check the effectiveness of deduplication about removing duplicate writes. We define the duplication rate as reduce the total number of pages being written into flash memory over the total number of pages being overwritten. So this figure shows the experimental results here. We can see that the duplication rate is about 4% to 24% across different workloads. And if we compare the optimal case, we do the deduplication of completely offline, we can find that we can achieve about up to 86% of the optimal case. We also studied the effectiveness of extending the flash space. We define the space saving rate as the total reduced number of the occupied erase blocks in the SSD over the total number of occupied erase blocks without doing any CFTL designs here. This figure shows the experimental results, and we can see that the space saving rate can achieve up to 31%. And for these two workloads, because the workload itself is quite a small, so we can receive much less benefits because for a given erase block, if you just write one flash page, there is also needs to occupy the whole erase block. For the sampling, we checked the response time speed up, and we can see here for the read request that we can achieve up to 110 times speed up compared to doing no sampling. For the write request, we can improve it by up to 7 times. And but the downside of doing sampling here is that the deduplication rate can be reduced. In this case, we can see it here. For example, for this workload H6, we can see the deduplication rate reduced from 24% to 19%. But compared to the performance speed up, we still believe this is quite worthwhile. So to conclude this talk, I would like to say the SSD endurance would still remain a serious concern in reality. And also, the data duplication is quite common in regular file systems, which provides very unique opportunities to improve the lifespan and via I/O deduplication on the device level. We present a unique content-aware flash translation layer to remove the duplicated writes and coalesce the redundant data in SSD on the fly. And also, we show that CFTL can actually effectively improve the SSD lifespan via on-device deduplication while maintain low performance overhead. Thank you very much, and I would like to take your questions.
Hi, I'm Asar from Permabit. I was wondering, apart from the efficiency you talked about, there's obviously a cost doing this in terms of storing more things in flash and on RAM to keep all the extra metadata that you use. Can you give us a sense on how much that is?
Okay. For the fingerprint store, it's about 25 bytes for each entry. So if we keep just 10% of the fingerprints in memory for 32 gigabyte SSD, it's about 20 megabyte memory space. And yeah, of course, concerning this issue, I would like to add one point here is that actually many techniques is available to improve this issue. For example, for the mapping table, we add another secondary mapping table here, and we can apply some techniques such as DFTL proposed by the Penn State folks. And actually, we consider it's quite effective to improve the space efficiency usage. But if the space usage is another thing is that actually we have talked with SSD manufacturers, and their idea is that the Most significant portion for the production cost is the flash memory chips themselves, not the RAM space. If you want a good performance, you can definitely add more RAM space on that without considering this issue too much. Yeah.
Thank you.
Peter Desnoyers from Northeastern. So I did find this very interesting. Just a comment about the memory that was raised by the last question. It appears that if you're going to go off chip, 128 meg comes for, is sort of the smallest size that anyone can get cheaply. So, in fact, there is enough memory on most of these to handle algorithms like that. What I was wondering is, have you looked at all at the SandForce controller, which appears, although no one's saying anything about it, from its behavior, it appears to be doing some type of deduplication similar to this?
I'm not quite familiar with this, but I think I would be very happy to see similar ideas taken in industry. That means our idea works.
Okay, yeah, unfortunately they haven't said a word about how it works internally.
Another thing is that actually if we want to save more space, another good approach is to do a runtime compression. And of course, that will also invite some new problems, for example, the data migration and something like that. But I still think it's worthwhile because flash memory costs a lot of money, especially if the commercial systems would like to consider reliability issues, they would like to choose the SLC-based flash memory, and it's very costly. So any approach any solution that can save flash memory space is welcome.
One more question.
Raghav, Penn State. I was wondering about your virtual block address mapping. So what happens if a value comes in, it's unique, but later in some point in time, a new LBA points to the same value. How is the virtual block address put in the OOB area of the page?
Oh, you mean, I'm not sure whether I can catch your question. You mean if a new, for the first time, a new fingerprint goes, a page with a new fingerprint goes to the SSD, right?
Yeah, so the OOB area now has the LBA. So if in the future, if a new LBA comes and points to the same page, how is the OOB area updated?
I did not mention in this talk, but actually we have offline deduplication methods, so that we do not worry about the first time issue. We will leverage the device idle's time to scan the flash memory pages and calculate the fingerprints. If it becomes worthwhile to put it into the fingerprint store, we can do that. So this can be done in offline, and this is actually a very good approach to do this. Thank you.
Yeah.
Ask please to take the remaining questions offline. Thank you.
Thank you very much.